Jeff said I could take a picture. So. I'm Jack, I'm an addict. Grateful to be here. Grateful to be clean. I will need that water, please. How was that turkey, huh? I figure everybody would be passed out by now, though. Tryptophanin. Yeah. Tryptophanin. And everybody's like, man, just pull that ticket. Pull that ticket. Pull that 50-50. So I'll try not to drag it on too long. And you can see me win that thing. It's great to hear everybody. We started off with beauty and intelligence, went to age, back to beauty and intelligence, and now back to age. Well, that's the way it goes, man. It was great to see Robin and hear his story. I was just stunned at how close our stories were, you know, and I thought, man, I had a 73 Impala. Was like a little chain steering wheel in it, so I had the front seat was like a bed, you know. And I had a Doberman Pinscher that lived in the backyard, which was the back seat. And if it got cold, though, she would come up with me, and we would just bundle up until we made it through. And, you know, you did have warmer temperatures. I was in Pismo Beach, you know, and how cold it gets there, you know. Some guy in Chicago's going, what? Yeah. But, yeah, it was just amazing how close our stories were. I too got clean at 23 years old. I don't think I would have made 24 had I continued to use. Pretty certain that wasn't going to happen. A lot of the things that were shared happened to me as well. You know, I started using at 12, 1972. You know, getting high was a big deal back then. You know, that's back when pot was like a felony. You know, you couldn't grow 59. We had to grow 59 plants on the roof, you know, behind a mulberry tree, and you know, you couldn't just grow them in your house. But I mean, I started at 12, and I didn't get in trouble for a while. It was probably like I was 13 before I started getting in trouble. And then it was never more than 6 months after that. It was like I could never make it past my birthday in April and like the 4th of July, and I couldn't make it through, you know, holidays, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving. You know, I just got snagged one of those times of the year every single year. And there was probably a few dropped in there else time. I got busted 22 times for, you know, a kid, and, you know, was out there using for that short of a time. You know, it was it's just the way I ran. You know, a designated driver nowadays would be someone who doesn't drink and drives everyone home from the party. The designated driver for me in Pismo was, hey, I got the most drunk drivings, I'll drive, because if I get another one, it doesn't fucking matter anyhow. You know, what's the difference? You know, I'm already going to do some time. So it's just a strange way of thinking, you know, strange way of living. But I'll tell you, when I first got high, when I first drank that first screwdriver, I put it in my Batman thermos, and I went off to school in the sixth grade. And it was Cinco de Mayo Day, 1972. And the teacher said, you know, we're going to have Mexican food, and we're going to celebrate this Cinco de Mayo Day. And you can bring anything you want to drink. And we joked, hey, we'll bring booze. And everybody laughed, thought it was funny. But once an addict like me latches on to that concept, I couldn't let it go. And just keep in mind, I'd never been high before. I'd never drank on my own before. But I knew my mom and dad had booze around. They didn't drink as such, but they always had like a knitted poodle with a bottle of vodka in it that they got at a VFW meeting bazaar, you know, or some shit like that. And I'll never forget, man, pulling that head off of that poodle, setting it down, and peeling the labels up, popping it, filling, you know, putting in my Batman thermos, and gluing those things back down and tying that head back on that poodle. I still have that poodle today. It's got a bottle of water in it, but I keep it just to remind me where how innocently it seems to start. Now, I went to school that day, and, you know, I guess a normal kid would have probably got his closest friends and went out and drank it together, you know, and had a good time and laughed. But a true addict, like I was an addict, and I knew that no one could be trusted, was such an important event. And so I went out and I drank it by myself. And I got drunk, and I went back, and I was a good kid. I was a straight A kid, and, you know, athlete type, and, I just told him I wasn't feeling well, so I said, "Yeah, go home." So I just skipped on home, and that's where it began. You know, something so simple, you know, so ordinary. You know, somebody tasting alcohol for the first time. You know, getting tipsy, and as my mom used to call it, watch out, you get tipsy. You know, my dad was always, "Yeah, too many." You know, and these bizarre concepts that addicts don't understand. You know, and that's where it started, and then. I had a younger friend who was smoking pot. He had brothers. And, I don't like being outdone by a younger kid either, you know. So we started smoking pot together. And that friend of mine, I just talked to him a couple weeks ago. You know, I still talk to him, still love him like a brother. He's like a brother. And his older brother was as close a thing to I had to a brother. And he passed away from this disease last year. And we'd lived together and been clean together for a long time, you know, but this disease is relentless. But we started smoking that pot, and I just took to this stuff, you know. It's like I was an only child, and it seemed like I was always uncomfortable. I felt anxious or uncomfortable or just never quite right. You know, I didn't seem to fit in, and that seems to be a typical story with people like us, you know, that... When I first got high, it was just like my whole life changed. And it was not the problem. You know, drugs were the solution, you know, to what was ailing me. And I loved it, you know. And I mean, by the time I was a junior in high school, junior high, I was selling acid to high school kids, you know. I mean, I had a friend's, my girlfriend's sister's boyfriend sold acid. He gave me acid for $1 a tab. I sold it for $2, and I was good at math. You know, that's one for me. You know, I could do this all day long, and I had a career, you know, at 14. And I was never a good drug dealer. I always ended up in the hole and always lost it, or the dog ate it, or it got stolen, you know, whatever I had to tell my connection to not kick my ass. But it was always something. We just sent a little love out. We were mentioning the fires and stuff going on. My cousin just got out of paradise last night, and I was talking to her on the phone when they were driving out. And I haven't seen him in a long time. I haven't seen her in a long time. And she grew up in paradise. You know, back in those days, you know, we were going camping together, and her brother taught me how to ride motorcycles and taught me how to love motorcycles. He passed away a few years ago, and I didn't go to the funeral. I didn't call him. I just had a heart attack, and he died of a heart attack. And I was just awkward. And when I heard that fire was going on yesterday, you know, I just texted her and, you know, said, "You okay? You know, you can come here," even though I haven't seen her but once in 20 years or whatever it's been. Being tight with family has always been difficult. I don't know if that was the only child syndrome or what, but I really related to the small circle that Christy was sharing about. You know, that. So I hope she's okay. I haven't heard from her today, so I just assumed she made it to where she was going. I already said all the good stuff that I was going to say tonight on the way here, which I knew would happen. I used to hate the day of the dinosaur. I remember when they started doing that over on the coast. You know, I didn't want to be a dinosaur. I guess you don't want to be a fossil. It's a dinosaur, all right. And I was taught an old timer, somebody that has 1 year more than you. So that makes you never an old timer. It's always a person with 1 year more than you. And I'm a bit of a, I guess I'd be kind of a missing link. If anything, and that's because when I got to recovery in Lompoc, California, 1983, they didn't have any NA meetings. I got sent to a alcohol rehab for that seventh drunk driving, and fortunately, back then they didn't take addicts. You know, it was like they were alcohol rehabs. You know, and you just didn't walk in and say, "I'm a dopey and I want to get clean," because they would run you off. And fortunately, I had those seven drunk drivings on my resume, you know, so they invited me in. And I went to the other fellowship, you know, because that's where they took us. You know, we piled in this old Plymouth, and seven of us would cruise down to the meeting. And, you know, one of my early meetings was at this Alano Club, and this old lady was sitting there. She must have been 80. She was sitting there knitting. And I just walked in. I mean, I'm kicking heroin, Valium, and alcohol, my favorite three, you know. And I was not feeling very well, and I just thought, this is weird, man. This old lady's having all these, you know, alcoholics and addicts at her house, you know. And after the meeting, I said that on the way home, and everybody started laughing. And they said, she's an alcoholic. I'm like, get out, fuck out of here. Come, that little old lady, I mean, she's knitting, you know. And Miss Pearl, I named my motorcycle after her. I have a white motorcycle. She had started that club, and and she let people come to her house and have meetings. And that's where my recovery started, with this wild band of alcoholics. And they did everything they could to help me. This one guy used to come out, Foley, used to come out every Thursday for our meeting. And he didn't talk much. He did something with the union. He was some union boss or something. Didn't say much. And he gave me my first book, and it just said, "To Jack, from Foley." And that's exactly how he talked, man. But he was there. He was a rock, man. And he would sit out there, and he would listen to my bullshit. And then it was like, it's time to go. He had to go get ready for work the next day. And, you know, those people taught me about recovery of the other fellowship and the history of that fellowship. And they taught me etiquette of meetings. They taught me how to start meetings. They taught me how to treat newcomers. At some point during that year, later in that year, they taught us how to start a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, because they realized at that point that there was enough people coming in to their meetings with drug problems that it was something that was needed. And I was just grateful to be there. I relapsed that summer of 83. I kept chipping with some heroin. I'd go from Lompoc and cruise down to Pismo, and I would score, and I would do like a couple bags, and I would drive back home, and I didn't fit in with my using friends, my junkie friends. You know, they always said, "Oh, Jack, you just drink too much." You know, my heroin connection, "Hey, you drink too much, Jack. That's your problem." You know, and I would go back to Lompoc, and I would feel guilty around all my friends that were in the other fellowship, and I would still go to meetings. And I was still trying, but it just felt like something was missing. And this couple, Don and Nancy, started Narcotics Anonymous meeting right around August of 83. And I got clean right around August of 83. And that first week, I was pretty smart when I had brain cells back then. And I read the book and learned all the key phrases, you know, and I could talk, you know, a lot of shit. That's how I survived out there, you know, was talking my way through stuff. And I gave a spiel at the meeting, so they made me the secretary. That's how you get the job, you know, you talk a little poop, and they hired me as a secretary. And I had like 30 days clean. It was a little different back then. What we call somebody with 90 days back then, sponsor. Yeah, that's what you, I mean, you're sponsoring people with 90 days back then. I mean, you didn't have any choice. There wasn't any 35 years, you know, there wasn't any 8 years or 10 years. It was, if you have 90 days and some guy came in, you know, got a day, then you could sponsor him. You had to, you know, it was just the way it was. And so I accepted, you know, this secretary job, and I, you know, at one point the meeting dwindled down to me and this other guy. You know, we'd just sit there and, you know, we'd read the other fellowship's book. We didn't even have any literature, you know, we would just read the other fellowship's book. And wherever it said alcohol, we just said drugs. Wherever it said alcoholic, we said addict. And we just read it. And then we finally got us some NA literature towards the end of that year. And I got us a basic text. And we would just sit there and read that together. And it just seemed like it was never going to happen. You know, it just seemed, we always heard, "Oh, there's no recovery in NA." That's what, you know, you'd hear people say, you know, that there's nothing happening there. And we were fortunate. We got a guy come in that had, I think he had 3 or 4 years, which was incredible, you know. And then a gal came into a recovery home that I had just left that year, and she had the energy of Sherry and Christy and Jeff and Jeff and Jeff, you know, that kind of energy, and to move people to excite people, to get them interested, to get them having fun. She was just a whirlwind of positivity and love, and she would just make us do things that none of us were comfortable doing, you know, and we just did them. You know, we had picnics and we went to the beach and we played games and we did all that shit that, man, it was just, you know, when you're a hip slick and cool junkie like I was, I mean, I still had tracks. I had to get rid of my rig when they made me secretary. I thought, well, shit, I better get rid of my outfit, you know, so I had to go home and get rid of it. I just kept it because just in case, you know, I might need that thing. They're hard to find in 1983, you know. So I ditched that sucker. It took me another 2 months to get rid of my pot plant down in Shell Beach, but I got rid of it, you know. And yeah, so the power of one person carrying this message cannot be minimized. You know, when you see these people come here and do this sort of thing, make, you know, cook this stuff and put this on, and they say they have 24 years. They've been doing that for 24 years. For 30 years, you know, that's love, that's dedication. And that's not just love come down here doing this shit, working their ass off. It's loving seeing the new people come here and to become a part of this fellowship and to grab a hold of this thing. Because they know that if you're new and you don't grab onto it tonight, you may not. You know, because if you've been around here 30 years, 35 years, you've seen a lot of people come to these meetings. A lot. I mean, thousands? Yeah, thousands. I've been to thousands of meetings. I've seen thousands of people come in. I don't know how many people that I've known have died. You know, it's an enormous number. You know, my best friend died. You know, my best friend that I was running around with when I was new, he's doing life in Nevada. You know, my best friend that I was running around with in Lompoc, he stayed with me for a year, got clean for a year. He's dead. You know, he relapsed, he went to jail. Did 6 months, got out, said he was going to use one more time. Made his brother take him by the connection. And he used one more time. And he's dead. You know, he's gone. And these are all my friends. These are the people I love and grew up with. You know, so when I see people with the kind of energy and love that these guys have in Tulare, that's a big part of the reason why we came back here. We moved over to the coast a couple of years ago. You know, 2014. We moved back to the coast. And I love the coast. And I love the people on the coast. But there was just something about Three Rivers, cave dwellers, that, I was born and raised in Bakersfield, you know, and I guess that may have been half my problem, I don't know, but it's the same kind of deal, it's the same kind of people, that there's just something about Valley people that draws me, and there's something about recovery people like this that draw me in, too. You know, it's just, it's an amazing thing. And we have them everywhere. They're on the coast. There's one right here. You know, we've been going to the jailhouse that I used to go to. We've been going there for 25 or more years. You know, I went to that jail a number of times. You know, I kicked heroin in there. I walked in there after going to jail in Bakersfield with all these oil field workers and stuff. You know, it was a little rough in there, you know. You go to jail in San Luis Obispo, you walk in, there's like murals on the wall. And I'm just like, where the hell am I? You know, this is crazy, man. And, you know, just those days, I was just trying to survive as a kid. You know, when I was using, I was just all in. You know, it was like everything I did, I felt like I was all in. You know, and this program didn't turn me around overnight. What this program has done for me is allow me to take that energy that I had and redirect it. And all my character defects that I had, to turn them around and use them for something good. Example, I'm obsessive. When I use heroin, I use heroin. You know, I remember my girlfriend, I'm driving from Pismo to Bakersfield, my girlfriend, I was making her shoot me up while I'm driving. So she would shoot me up, and I would just about go out, and as soon as I would come to, I would make her do it again. And she's crying half the way there, and I'm nodding half the way there. That's just the way things were done in my head, you know. And the dog would be panting in the back seat, and I'd be smacking the dog, and it's completely out of control, you know. Just an obsessive, you know, almost hoping I would die, but afraid to die, not afraid to die. Just a weird combination of complete recklessness I've done amyl nitrate going down the freeway driving. You know, what's that? You know, and that's the stuff that makes you pass out with one whiff, you know. And I mean, so I get here, and you guys taught me how to take that energy, that obsessive nature that I have, and turn it into something good. I went back to Mom's after I got clean. I found a shoebox full of baseball cards. And I always had nicknames. I was Yellow Jack, you know, because I used to take a lot of Yellow Jackets. Those were downers. I know there's a lot of speed freaks nowadays. These made you go the other way, made you sleepy, something you may not know about. I was Black Whack Jack, you know, the Angel Dust. They called it Black Whack in the neighborhood, you know, and I was Black Whack Jack or Smackback Jack. I found this shoebox full of baseball cards, and I started collecting baseball cards, and I started selling baseball cards at shows, and I opened a store, baseball card shop, and all of a sudden my nickname was Shoebox Jack. I made little cards, you know, Shoebox Jack, you know, and so I had a shoebox one year, and about, I think it was 3 years later, I had a million cards in a 1,000-foot square baseball card shop. That's the way my thing is. When I get into something, I get into something. You know, it's just, and the beauty of it is that obsessive nature is not bad. It's just misdirected. You know, I was using it. It was uncontrolled in my active addiction. It had no direction. It was in destruction mode. And I'm so grateful you guys allowed me to be here long enough and to help me direct my character defects in a positive way, because they've become some of my greatest assets. You know, I'm the guy that, you know, goes into the public restroom, and I go in the stall to shoot up some coke, and I forgot to bring a glass of water. Oh, so I just right out of the toilet, you know, bang it up, and I got the Hep C too. I don't know where I got it, but you know, so. There was no blue stuff in the toilet. It was. You can get Hep C doing that. Did you know that? Yeah, you can get Hep C. Probably B and A too, I would imagine. I had those also. Now I'm a water treatment operator. I produce drinking water for over 1.2 million visitors to a national park. You know, I'm in charge of people's health. It can't happen, you know. Seven drunk drivings. I got a Class A driver's license with my hazmat. Hazmat, you got to go through the big guys, the Homeland Security look at you now. And they look closely. You know, they take that serious, that Homeland Security stuff now. Yeah, so I can drive double tankers full of gasoline across state lines, okay, with seven drunk drivers. I ran through a Circle K window in my dad's 55 Pontiac, you know. Just imagine that guy behind the wheel, two tanks of gasoline. Yeah, it could happen, you know. So if you're new, you know, and you piss it all away, you fucked everything up, you don't have a job, you don't have a car, you don't have a license, you don't have a job history, I get you, man. I didn't have a big history of job. I've been a dishwasher a little while. I've been a breakfast cook, but I really didn't have a job history, you know. I didn't like working. I'm still not big on it, but I go. Anything can happen here. If you hang with these people with this kind of energy, with this kind of direction, with this kind of proven track record of directions, I just believe that anything can happen. I mean, addicts going back to school and becoming nurses, you know? Come on. You know, look at us. I mean, we build things. We build schools and we teach kids. And it's just unbelievable that what can be accomplished when an addict gets clean, gets some spirituality, and gets some direction. Am I getting close? Somebody yell. Just go like, hey, something like that. So I'll just ride that dinosaur on out of here when I'm done. You know. And one thing this program and the other program taught me was how to love. You know, they always say you got to love yourself or you can love others, and it really didn't work that way for me. I had to learn how to love the newcomer, and that's how I learned how to love myself, or at least like myself better. I'm not sure. Some days it's just like myself better, which is still a big improvement. I was sitting in that recovery home one day, and this guy came in, he sat down on the couch, and he started shaking. And he goes into a seizure, and everybody's, I mean, this is like 15, you know, recovering people in this recovery home. You know, nobody has more than 90 days. And they all start bouncing off the walls, getting out. Nobody wants to be around this guy dying, you know. And I was sitting there, and I just looked at him. I just started petting his head. I'm like, just hanging in there, man. Somebody's coming. And I'm petting his head. I'm saying, you're kind of doing the albacore flop, aren't you? And I could see him, he's kind of foaming at the mouth. But all of a sudden, he looked at me. He just started smiling. And he's still all shaking, you know. And I just petted his head until the ambulance got there, and they came and treated him, you know. And that was my first experience of it. I didn't take his wallet. I didn't even look through it, you know. I was pretty sure he didn't have anything anyhow. He's pretty new, so. But, no, really, I didn't. I did it for no gain, and that was a big deal for a junkie. I mean, like I say, my tracks were, they looked like tattoos, man. I gave up the days of trying to hide my tracks, you know. I just wore long sleeves, you know, or half sleeves, you know. That was the only way I could cover them up. And so I helped this guy out, and it felt good, you know. It felt better than selling PCP to this guy and finding out the next day that he had died. He slammed his car into a fence, and he didn't make it home after scoring. Felt better than seeing this couple that I knew, you know, that I would always sell drugs to, and seeing their kids walking around. They're this tall, and they're all filthy, dirty, and crying, and they would make them leave the room. And it just felt so much better than that. I was just so tired of the destruction, you know. My best friend shot himself. I was living with him in Pismo. He shot himself, and I came to him. He was at the sink, and he was leaning over. And I said, "What are you doing?" He goes, and he was bleeding. I said, "Hey, I thought he had a nosebleed." I said, "Put your head back." So he puts his head back, and I could see gushing blood from right here. So we called the cops, and the cops came, and ambulance came, and he survived for a while. That was the end of my fun. That's when using stopped being fun for me. You know, it was no longer, hey, let's go get high with the friends. You know, it was a mission. It was a destruction mission. I woke up seeking oblivion from the moment I woke up. You know, I would wake up, I would shoot a bag, I would drink a half pint of coffee flavored brandy, and I would start drinking beer, and I would go out and find money to shoot more heroin. And on the bad days, I would wake up and I would have nothing, and I would lay there in withdrawals until somebody came and rescued me. And, you know, that's the end of the road for me. You know, and that lasted a couple of years. You know, I lost faith in God, any that I may have had before that. I lost faith in people, in myself. You know, there was just nothing left. You know? I feel bad for the addicts that used to call, because we didn't have hotline then when I was new. We would give them our number, you know, and yeah, I just was very angry at people that committed suicide. So if someone called me and said, hey, you know, I'm going to kill myself, you know, I'd be like, you want me to come over and help? You know, it was just, I had no mercy, man. It was horrible, you know, that I was so angry and so hurt from that. Now I would just say, you gotta get your head out of your ass. Now we have that hardcore, you know, get your head out of your ass. Get to a meeting, you know. And if you need help, call me. I'll come over there, and you don't have to whine anymore. And just, it was just horrible. I mean, and that's what you get when you got guys with 60 days on the other line, you know, that have never been around recovery, you know. And fortunately, I did soften eventually, you know, to develop some compassion and to understand, you know, that. You know, those types of illnesses are just very, very difficult, you know. And I just hope some of those people that I talked to made it somewhere else, you know, because it was tough, you know. But for the most part, I stood at the door and I introduced myself to every addict that came in. And I hoped and prayed that every single one of them stayed, you know, and I did everything in my power. Give them literature, coffee, set them down, talk to them. Pick them up for meetings. I did everything I could to help those people stay clean. And Though I don't have that type of energy today, you know, I see it. I see it everywhere I go. I see it in every meeting I'm at. You know, that's what continues to make the same role. You know, that kind of love of another person just because they have the same illness that I had. I was born and raised in Bakersfield. I was a little on the prejudice side. You know, I mean, I used the most derogatory term for every different type of person: black, brown, red, yellow, gay, whatever it was, whatever your religion was. I found the word you hated the most, and that's what I addressed you by, you know. And, of course, in recovery, you know, the first guy that comes up and asks me to, you know, sponsoring, you know, or the first guy that helped me was actually a African-American guy in recovery. I didn't know how to make a bed. I'd been living in sleeping bags and in my car for so long. I didn't know how to make a bed properly. And then even when I lived at home, I really didn't. Melvin came over and showed me how to make a bed, you know, and we became good friends. But of course, you know, eventually a gay guy asked me to sponsor him. I'm like, have you heard me share? yes, okay, you know. And African-American, Mexican, Vietnamese, you know, bikers, you know, just whatever, you know, everybody that asked, yep. I had a guy, an African-American guy, who was a preacher, 40-year-old preacher. I'm like 24. He says, will you sponsor me? I'm like, have you heard me share? You know, I'm from Bakersfield, man. I'm like, yeah, let's do it, man. I'll do anything I can to help you. And these people taught me how to love people, you know, how to love all people, you know, to know that there's good in everyone, you know, even the rat bastards, you know. And you're going to get the rat bastard coming in. He's going to push every button you've got. You're going to have to work around it and through it, you know, but they're coming. You know, each group's got to have one, you know. You got to have that one pain in the ass, you know. And if you haven't seen them yet, ooh, might be you. years with that group, New Attitudes Group of Narcotics Anonymous in Lompoc, California. Love that group with all my heart. And it was difficult to move, but Nancy and I moved. And I'll just share this about how the program works for us and has worked for us. Kind of in a nutshell, instead of just working steps, you know, yeah, you got to work the steps. You know, if you don't, you're going to get loaded. I mean, I've seen that. I can safely say that. If you're an addict and you don't work the steps, that's my big choice today. It's not to use or not use. I didn't have that choice when I got here. I don't have that choice today. I have the choice to work the steps or not work the steps. If I choose not to work the steps, then I'm going to get loaded. That's the clear-cut direction that I have in my life. That's my knowledge. Okay, so that's where I'm at in my life, in my understanding of myself and my illness. But how it works in general, you know, for us, our jobs were ending in Lompoc. She had a good job. Nancy had a good job, and we've been married for 20 years or so. We had good jobs. I had a job in Santa Barbara. We had a 65 Chevy pickup stepside. We had a 56 Ford Fairlane. We had no car payments. We had these two old cars, and we just cruised around, man. We had an old shovelhead motorcycle, and life was good, man. We did pretty much, you know, we worked and did whatever we wanted to, you know, and all of a sudden these jobs were ending about the same time in this 2008 crunch that was happening when the economy started going belly up. And we went and did our taxes one day, and the lady says, well, what's it look like? She says, you owe 10 grand. I'm like, wait, what? You know, I'm like, no way. I go, the year before, we got like a refund, you know. She's like, you owe 10 grand. I'm like, holy moly, you know. So I'm squirming. And we walk out, and we're rattled, you know. And it's like, wait a second, you know. It's like, well, we must look pretty good on paper, you know, if they're squeezing 10 grand out of us. Let's get a construction loan. And we already have this little piece of property up in Three Rivers. So let's get a construction loan. We'll build a house. We'll move to Three Rivers, and we'll work in a national park. It's like, okay. I mean, like, I wouldn't do that today. I don't have that kind of balls today. that was crazy. So I called over there, and I get this job. A guy calls me. He goes, you got a Class A license? I'm like, yeah. He goes, okay. So we did this little phone interview, and he called me a while back. He goes, hey, you still want that job? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay, come on over. So Got me my Class A driver's license. Got me a job. So I move over to Three Rivers. I'm staying in this 30-foot trailer on the property while they're building our house. My job has ended in Santa Barbara, and Nancy is hanging on to hers until I can get a full-time job, because this was only a part-time job. It wasn't even a full-time job. It was a seasonal job. You know, so I'm on a road crew. I'm driving this garbage truck through the national park, you know, waking everybody up first thing in the morning. I'm the guy that slams that lid first thing in the morning when you're out camping, you know. You know he's there, you know. And I had the time of my life, you know, but when that job ended at the end of 08, I got no job. I'm out looking for jobs. I'm trying to drive propane trucks and looking at all these different jobs. I'm like, we're dying on the vine here. I would get so anxious that I would go downtown by sale and just go through the antique stores and the thrift stores and look at antiques and shit, because I didn't know what to do. I couldn't walk into another business, you know, and ask for an application. You know, I was just, you get that fear thing going where you're just frozen, and it's like, I want to do something else. And, you know, in the old days, we know what I would have did. You know, I would have got loaded, you know, but some days I just couldn't do it, you know. And I remember talking to a guy there at the park, and he said something about water treatment. He said they had a class down at the college in Visalia. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you know. I mean, I didn't go to school when I was in school. You know, there's no way I'm going back. But I thought, hey, just follow directions, you know. You guys taught me that. So I went down there, and I asked this lady. I go, hey, you got a water treatment course? And she's like, yep. She goes, I just signed you up. I'm like, whoa, you know, wait. I don't want to be signed up. She goes, oh, this is the last day. I'm like, okay, you know. So now I'm in a wastewater water treatment course. Don't know shit about it. I know about pulling out toilet water, putting it in your arm, gives you hepatitis. That's all I know about water treatment. You know, you got to treat it, you know. And it needs to be treated. So I started going to this class. And this unemployment class that I took, they said, just find the job you want and write them a letter and tell them that you want to be there and tell them the reasons why you want to be there. I'm like, that is a bunch of shit. You know, I've been finding a job my whole life. I don't need anybody to tell me to write a letter. I start writing this letter. You know, I was like, I write this letter to the guy. I said, hey, I just moved 2 miles from the gate. I want to be here. I just started taking this course. I want to be here. And of course, I didn't hear anything. You know, I didn't hear anything in 2 seconds, of course. That's what it means for an addict. You know, I didn't hear that day, so nobody wants me. A couple weeks later, I'm out in the yard, and I get a call, and the guy's like, hey, still want that job? I'm like, yeah, I do. He's like, come on up. I said, I'm on my way. And he laid out all his paperwork. He says, we're going to put you through this program. We're going to help you get all your certificates and become an operator, and we're going to hire you on full-time, and you're going to get to work in Lodgepole, you know, through the giant forest. And I said, okay, sounds good to me, and just walked out of there like, yeah, you know. It just couldn't happen, you know. That kind of shit just doesn't happen. And like I say, I wouldn't do that today, to take a part-time job and move out of town with a part-time job. I'm not stupid, but back then I guess I was. Well, you guys have taught us that, to have faith, you know, to listen to these suggestions, not to shut everything out. You know, those suggestions that came from unemployment, from my friend, you know, from that lady. Why did she do that for me? She could have just said, yeah, we have a course. You know, she didn't have to sign me up and get me in. I'm like a 48-year-old dude in there. And she's like, yeah, come on, you'll enjoy it. He's a good teacher. You know, why did she do that for me? I don't know. You know, I just know that, you know, to me, my higher power is a path. It's a river. It's not a guy in the sky or anything. God to me is a flow. It's a direction. It's a positivity. It's a faith. And I always just tried to get out of it. And I always tried to buck it. And I try to get in that flow and let this power take care of me and guide me. And it's hard sometimes because I don't like the way that it's going. You know, I don't like being unemployed without the outlook of a job, you know, for 4 months, you know, with a house being built right in front of me, you know. I don't like that fear, you know. I don't like feeling like I'm not worthy of these people's jobs, you know. I didn't know how to interview. I don't want to interview well, you know. I interviewed for a job over when we moved to the coast. This guy says, this is how I interviewed. The guy in Santa Cruz goes, so, you know, three of them lined up there giving me the drill, you know. So, in a team building effort, you know, What would you do to endear yourself to your fellow operators? And I'm just like, I just said, you know what, I'd buy donuts and just hope they liked me until the next sucker came along, you know. And they all just looked at me, and I was like, you know, I go, I don't know about all this team building stuff. I go, I get the job done. You give me what you need done, and I'll do it. If that's something that appeals to you, then we're going to get along. You know, and that was as good as I could do at that moment, you know. It's like, call somebody and ask them about me. That's the best way to do it, you know. But don't ask me, because I didn't know how to respond to that. I was like, so we got this house built. I got a job, Nancy quit her job, came to Three Rivers. And I always sing it like Green Acres. Three Rivers is the place to be. I don't sing down by Three Rivers. I don't sing that. I sing it. And all of a sudden we're in Three Rivers. We're living in this bitchin' little house that we helped design. And high on the hog, man. Going to work. Nancy got a job at the gate. So here we are. That dream unfolded, just laid out. Just spit out there. And one day I find a lump on my neck. You know, I'm just going to leave it alone. But I just started working in a wastewater plant. I'm like, oh my God, you know, I got something, you know. So I ran to the doctor. Hey, what is this? And he's like, I don't know, you know. And it was cancer. So all of a sudden the dream has turned kind of weird on me again, you know. And you get the point, you know, that I just continue to come to meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I continue to try to help people. I continue to accept help from people. 35 years. Some guy with 30 days has some ideas for me. I'm all for it. You know, I see guys and gals that are new to this program in, places like Woodlake. And I see how they operate, you know, and I see them love this program and get a hold of it. You know, and that's the energy that I feed off, and I continue to take that from anyone. I learn from everyone. You know, it's just such a, you know, once you get here, we're all equal. You know, I got 35 years of experience. I mean, if you need somebody with some experience with something, I may have been through it, you know, or know somebody that was, you know, has been through it. I'm running out. So grateful to be here. You know, this bunch here is just a great group. Grateful to see my friend Mike from the coast. My friends from Ventura. I hope everything works out okay there and they get you guys straightened out. I pray my cousin is okay. I'm gonna, you know, call her tomorrow, make sure she made it out of there. This world is different today, you know. I mean, it's different than the days of being in a meeting when I was new. We didn't have cell phones, you know. We didn't have cameras on every corner. Thank God, you know. I mean, I'm glad we didn't have cell phones because I would probably still be in jail, you know, from all the... I can only imagine the trouble we would have caused. But I always wonder, I'm a junkie. If I had a $500 cell phone, how would that thing make it through a weekend, you know? I mean, I would have sold that thing like that, you know. Thank you so much for thinking of me. To ask me to come share anything that I can do to help this fellowship, I'm willing to do. And I hope that somebody's got something out of this. And hope your ticket is not drawn. I hope my ticket is.